News with Nick, starting at 6 a.m. on May 19th, 2016. We are here. It's the first time in 2 months, probably, about. My fault, because I was too lazy, because that time I got a strike on my YouTube account. I was like, what? Now I'm depressed. I'm not going to do any shows. It is kind of sad because it's like, well, I want to do the video recording, which we are doing the video version of the show. However, I don't know how to get you the video version because it can't go on my YouTube. It will probably end up on the Puke in the Gang channel, in which case you can probably still get it at the website, pukeinthegang.com, click on episodes, log into your PCL account, and check out this great picture I have of Trump here. He took this picture yesterday or the day before, I believe. He's posing profile style. Like, basically, if you're going to be on a coin, except his eyes are closed, and he's like, well, are his eyes closed? It's kind of hard to tell, because all the fat around his eyelids make it look like his eyes are closed. I can't even, maybe his eyes are open, and he's going, he's glaring down some Mexos, but his eyes could be closed, and he's going, ah, I'm very relaxed in the presidency, or other dirtier things he could be thinking. Kind of hard to tell. Pretty great pick, though. So we got that going. We got that going on the live stream. Okay, what time is it? Oh, 6:01 now. Well, we've been going for one whole minute, folks. That has been the show. Thanks for tuning in. Okay. All right, let me click out of this. Oops. Let me click out. It's the worst show ever so far. Okay, so great news. I woke up, and the news gods have smiled on us. We have breaking this morning some news. So we're going to jump right into the breaking news of the day. Egypt Air Flight 804 vanishes from radar with 66 people aboard. Well, you know, that's way better than Egypt Air Flight 66 vanishing with 804 people aboard.
You can see behind me, we've had family members, dozens of them, coming through here behind me, coming to get the latest, to find out what exactly happened to their family members, to their loved ones. And what they're telling us right now is that Egyptian officials are very uncertain about how the plane went down, but what they're telling them, that it did, in fact, hit the water. It crashed into the Mediterranean. Now, this is different from the official line we were getting from various government officials saying that they are not saying that this plane has crashed yet.
This is breaking right now, I guess. Earlier it was disappeared. Now it is crashed into the ocean. So, okay, let's keep going.
Even though it's 8.5 hours after it disappeared from radar, the officials still haven't said it's crashed, although we're hearing from family members a different story. They are telling us that officials are saying that the plane crashed into the Mediterranean. But right now, the main focus is on that.
What is, why? I don't know. Let's read the story. Egypt Air Flight 804 vanished from radar on its way from Paris to Cairo with 66 people aboard. 66 is too low. If I get on a plane and it's like, yeah, we're only like a third full, I'm like, oh, no, no, no. I'm getting right off. That's a crashed plane for sure. The plane was flying at 37,000 feet when it lost contact overnight aboard the above the Mediterranean Sea, the airline tweeted. Somber relatives gathered in Cairo and Paris airports seeking word on their loved ones. They were ferried to special centers at both airports where translators and psychiatric support awaited. Ooh. Oh, my goodness. Do they just have psychics on call? That's what you call them, right? Psychiatric support people. Psychics on call, and they're like, oh, we got the plane crash. Get in. I guess they would be crisis counselors, right? So they probably just go anywhere. Like, oh, I'm on call. I'm going to the airport now. I'm so sorry that your son has crashed into the Mediterranean. However, we can talk to him if I rub your hand enough. He says, we. Splash. Okay, too much. I'm out of control. Get it? Because it was a psychic and he can speak to the outer world. The chat says the relatives are wearing sombreros. Somber. Okay, so the flight left at 11:09 p.m. local time and was supposed to land in Cairo at 3:15 a.m. Thursday. Both the departure and arrival cities are in the same time zone. The location of the last contact was 173 miles from the Egyptian coast. There was no special cargo on the flight and no notification of any dangerous goods. Wow, there is too many bullet points here. Ooh, okay. A distress signal was detected in the general vicinity where the flight disappeared. Adel said. The distress signal was detected at 4:26 a.m., about 2 hours after the jet vanished? Wow. How is that possible? If you were supposed to land at 3:15 and you crashed on the way there, what is a distress signal? Ooh. He said the distress signal could have come from another vessel in the Mediterranean, but the Egyptian armed forces stressed that they have not received a distress call. So it's like you crash, right? It's like, I forgot to hit the distress button. And you spend 2 hours swimming towards it, and you're like, boom, got it, finally. Weird. Greek air traffic controllers spoke to the pilot at 2:27 a.m., but the pilot did not mention any problems. Man, can you believe being an air traffic controller over there? They must have a universal language, right? Do they all do English for air traffic? But even so, if you're doing that, you're dealing with people with crazy accents all day long. How can you even understand what's going on? I'm sure there's a way, but like if you're flying from Egypt, they're speaking Egyptian. Then you fly to France, they're speaking France. So I don't know. Weird. I'm sure we could look it up, but we're not going to. Okay, so that is the breaking news today. Let's see if there's any new live updates. I'm going to refresh this page. Egypt's army says it's taking all necessary procedures to find the missing plane by dispatching a number of search and rescue vehicles. Okay. Oh, this is so slow. Nope. 56 passengers and 10 crew. Wow. That is a high crew-to-passenger ratio there. Yeah, pretty much no one was on that plane. That is a huge plane for only having 66 people on or only 56 passengers. Okay. All right, what's next? Maybe we'll check in later this morning to see if anyone has had any updates. Texas man follows a woman into the bathroom to check her gender because she was dressed like a man. From this website. A Dallas woman was questioned about her gender by a man who followed her into a bathroom because he said she was dressed like a man. Nice, I love these. Can't get enough of these stories. Jessica Rush told KXSS she filmed the last seconds of the encounter on her cell phone Thursday afternoon. My first thought was, I'm about to be attacked. Just because I'm a 5'3" female. I understand one thing if you are like a cop of the Dallas Police Department, but just some random guy coming in, I think is absolutely absurd and inappropriate. Oh, she's like, oh, if a cop followed me in, that'd be completely fine. Just another random guy? No! Okay. This video is not playing. It's kind of making me mad. Oh, it's probably because of my ad blocker. I can probably tell. Oh, well. Guess we don't get to watch it. Rush, who is not transgender, was receiving treatment for an injured arm at the hospital Thursday. As so-called bathroom bills prompt debates about the use of public restrooms by transgender people, Rush's Facebook video of the conversation had drawn over 10,000 views by Monday. And apparently in the video, you hear the man say, "When I saw you enter, I thought you was." And it cuts off there. "I thought you was a man?" "Oh, a boy," Rush replied, ? Is she wearing? She's wearing a t-shirt and baseball cap, baseball shorts. "You know it's difficult," the man said with a shrug as he walked away from the bathroom. "You are dressed like a man, of course. You are dressed like a man, so..." Wow. So she got all that on video. I wish I could see it. He later told Rush he was confused when he saw her go into the bathroom and went into the restroom with his mother to make sure she was good. Can we find this video? I'm going to need to take a sec and see if we can get this. What should I look up? Texas bathroom follow. Self-appointed bathroom cop catches Dallas woman using woman's restroom. Oh, is this the video? Come on. Ooh, play it. Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Okay, good. I've done a good job. I've done a good thing. We found the video. Case in point, the way things are headed, Texas may very well have its own crack squad of bathroom police. In the meantime, it's up to self-appointed enforcers of traditional gender norms to educate which bathroom strangers should use. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. Let's play this video. Let's see if it's too loud.
Wait, what did you say?
I said you didn't look like a girl when I saw you enter, so I thought it was a...
A boy?
Yeah, and I was kind of confused when I said this. Are you rich?
Yeah.
You know, so that's the only reason now that I see the woman. Is that a problem?
Yeah, that's pretty good. See?
You know, it's difficult. You dress like a...
She doesn't know what to say. Like, she's in a very awkward... She's like, that's, okay... So she's in a very awkward situation. This probably never happened before, obviously. So she's like, whatever, I'm just recording.
Yeah, that's pretty good. See?
You know, it's difficult. You dress like a man?
Okay. You know, it's difficult. You're dressed like a man. Solid point.
Of course, you dress like a man. So, yeah, you dress like a man.
That's the shit we do.
Okay. And he just walks away. Yeah, it was kind of confusing. Certainly you dress like a man, he says several times. Okay, this is way too many things for the same story. So that happened. Guy walks into bathroom, okay? Here's another story. Woman mistaken for transgender harassed in Walmart bathroom. Yes! Amy Toms. Well, if your last name is Toms... Ooh, here's a picture of her. She doesn't even look that bad. A little short-haired, little hippie bracelet there. But anyway, all hippies are trannies, right? Amy Toms was washing her hands in the women's bathroom at Walmart in Danbury Friday when a stranger approached her and said, "You're disgusting. You don't belong here." Well, maybe she didn't think she was transgender. Maybe she just thought she was disgusting. After momentary confusion, she realized that the woman next to her thought, because of her pixie-style haircut and baseball cap, that she was transgender. Tom believes the incident happened because of the national controversy sparked by a law that was passed in North Carolina attempting to force transgender people to use a bathroom of the gender they want to be at birth. Since then, the religious conservatives have launched a boycott of Walmart competitor Target, which has said transgender people are welcome to use its bathrooms freely. I saw that there was this video of a lady walking through like a Target with a Bible or something going, God, now I got to look this up. Great. After experiencing the discrimination of the, I cannot fathom this. Okay, let's watch this video. Oh God, it's so
Hello,
long.
Hello, internet. It is me. So I'm sure a lot of you guys.
It's way long. We're not watching this. I'm going to play it while I look for another video.
And I saw it. And it happened, and I thought to myself, this is unbelievable. Like, she said, you are not supposed to be here, you need to leave. So at first I was like, does she think I like work in a different store, and I shouldn't be in this bathroom? So I said, yes I do, and then she flipped me off, and she's like, you're disgusting, and she storms out.
Wow, flipped me off, huh?
So I realized, like, when I was washing my hands, like, holy shit. She just thought I was somebody who was transgender. And she thought I was a dude who was hiding in the women's bathroom.
And I would never be that disgusting. So don't even go there.
So, okay. I get that I have short hair. Now, I was wearing...
All right, we got to skip ahead. This is way too long. Let's see if we can get to her saying something stupid.
I'm sorry. I get all up in arms about this issue because I was a transgender people advocate person before any of this happened. But after today and after experiencing firsthand the discrimination that they face, I cannot fathom how much discrimination transgender people must face in a lifetime. I mean,
okay. All right. You're interesting. All right. Here's a better video. Mother marches through Target with her family to protest transgender bathroom policy. Oh, man, she is about as large as you would imagine. Slayer548 in the chat. Thanks for coming.
Attention, Target!
Oh, yes! This is going to be so good. Oh, my goodness. So she's in the cleaner aisle. She's got her family. Her husband looks over here. Her teenage son, he's on his phone texting. Her son that looks about 7 behind her, maybe 6. And then someone recording. So she started in the cleaning aisle or something, and she's raised her Bible, and she's starting to walk forward. Here we go.
Customers, do not be deceived. Target would have you believe with their Mother's Day displays that they love mothers and children. This is a deception. This is not love, and they've proven it by opening their bathrooms to perverted men.
Yes, amazing. Please don't believe that they love mothers. They've opened their bathrooms to perverted men.
I'm a mother of 12, and I'm very...
Oh, my God! Of course you are. Of course you're a mother of 12. Look at you. Oh, my goodness. You're their whole church. Wow. This show's turned out way better than I ever expected. I haven't even gotten to real content. We just are doing mother marches through Target stuff.
Disgusted by this wicked practice. Target does not protect mothers and children. Mothers, get your children out of this store. Mothers have enough decency to get out of this store. It's a dangerous place. This is not loving. What Target has done is very hateful. It's hateful towards families. It's hateful towards mothers.
I know this is getting old, but there's another minute we have to watch. She thinks she's in Mordor, pretty much. Like, I've dared to step into the Target, and I'm very brave.
People towards children! America, when are you going to wake up? When are you going to stand up for the right things, America? Are you going
to
let the...
Oh, the camera just panned to the right? It looks like all of her kids are there, probably.
Devil rape your children, America! It's time to stand up and have a voice! Instead of bowing to the homosexual...
So she's been marching this whole time. I don't know where they're going. It looks like they might be going to the food court, of course. All right, kids, eat up!
...sexual perverted agenda that's taking over this nation!
No, they
don't! You need to run and flee this!
Wow, is someone else following him going, no, 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 they don't. He's the reverse of the guy at the gay marriages booth.
I wouldn't spend a penny of my money here. This is wicked. This is confusion. This is twisted.
Can you guys please leave?
Some girl comes up and goes, can you guys please leave? Thanks. They're going towards the door, by the way. Although it says do not enter, or she's going toward the wrong door, I think. That's like the indoor.
Abominable in the sight of God.
Oh, yes, the camera pans around as, like, several Target employees have followed them and are, like, shooing them out. They definitely just went out the indoor. Way to be smart and following rules. Look at that face. Oh, my goodness. You are a fat tranny. Wow.
Nation and Target!
Oh, that was the husband yelling. I don't know what he's yelling. Can we go back and figure it out?
The Chuck of the is coming on this nation and Target!
Ah, yes! The judgment of God is coming on this nation and Target. Oh, man. I'm going to be coming on this nation and Target, if you know what I mean. I don't know. No, don't clip that. Anyway, the point is, wow, holy crap. That is amazing. The judgment of God coming on this nation and Target. All right. Holy crap. Good one, guys. She got caught up in the likes. Teen accused of live streaming friend's rape for attention. An Ohio teenager accused of live streaming her rape of her 17-year-old friend has pleaded not guilty to multiple charges stemming from the alleged incident in February. Yes, we're a little behind, folks. I said I hadn't done a show for 2 months, so whatever. Mariana Lonina, 18, a student at New Albany High School outside Columbus, was attempting to record the assault as evidence, her attorney said. She's in the habit of filming everything with this app called Periscope. She does everything possible to contain the situation, even to the point of asking, while it's being filmed, to these Periscope followers, what should I do now? What should I do now? Woo! Judge set her bond at $800,000. Her co-defendant... So I only do things in fractions of a million. So I... $800,000. Her co-defendant, Raymond Gates, 29, also pleaded not guilty, and his bond was set to $750,000, according to CBS News. The pair has been charged with rape, kidnapping, sexual battery, and pandering sexually oriented matter involving a minor. So she's not under arrest for rape. She's under arrest for... Oh, she's also charged with the illegal use of a minor in a nudity-oriented material or performance. Hmm. Okay. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. Leona and the victim... her name's not Leona. I don't know why I keep saying that. Lanina and the victim, friends who attended the same high school, met Gates at a mall while they were shopping. He bought them a bottle of vodka and encouraged them to meet the next day, which the victim wanted to do. My client is along for the ride, so to speak. They began drinking at Gates' homes in Columbus on February 27th when he began to sexually assault the 17-year-old, and Lanina began live-streaming the violence. Oh no. The report also says the teenager can be heard screaming, "No, it hurts so much, please stop," and "Please no," multiple times. On Friday, O'Brien disputed the idea that Lanina was acting in the best interest of the victim when she began filming the assault. Initially, he said she thought her actions would prevent the assault, which makes sense. Like, if someone's about to rape someone, you're like, I'm kind of recording, so you might not want to do that because I'm recording. But if you're so drunk and horny, you're like, I'm doing it anyway. Then it's like, okay... And then it says, he added, got caught up in the likes. So you start recording on Periscope. I've never used Periscope. Maybe I should. But then it's like, bloop, 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 bloop. You're like, wow, I'm getting a lot of hits here. Getting a lot of comps today for this rape video. So I'm never gonna stop. All right, let's see what the actual video says here. All righty. It's probably just from court.
Material involving a minor, second count, community-oriented material or performance. My client's not complicit, I would submit. She's willing to be fully cooperative as a condition thereof.
Nope, this is completely unusable audio. Wow, nice job, court recorders. Stupid idiots. Russia denies wrongdoing after jet barrel rolls over U.S. aircraft.
Well, Russia's defense ministry has rejected criticism that one of its jets made aggressive maneuvers near a U.S. reconnaissance plane over the...
A U.S. Air Force reconnaissance plane was barrel-rolled by a Russian jet over the Baltic Sea during a routine flight in international airspace, U.S. European Command said Saturday, but Russia disputed that account. The incident Thursday occurred when a Russian jet, quote, performed erratic and aggressive maneuvers... as it flew within 50 feet of the U.S. aircraft's wingtip. So they're saying that Russia, like, is performing aerial stunts around some other U.S. planes, which is like, okay, that's a pretty boring story. But then yesterday, we get this other report.
Now, another U.S. military aircraft has had a close encounter in international airspace. This time, the Pentagon says Chinese fighter jets carried out what they call an unsafe intercept. Brian Todd is tracking this development for us. Brian, what are you finding out?
Well, we're getting this just in from the Pentagon, from a U.S. defense official telling CNN that at least two Chinese J-11 tactical aircraft, those are fighter jets, that they carried out what's called an unsafe intercept of a U.S. reconnaissance plane over the South China Sea. This occurred on Tuesday, according to the defense.
I have no clue what that means, unsafe intercept. I think in football it means you jumped up too high and you intercepted the ball. But because it was so high, it's unsafe because you could come down like on your neck.
Official. At one point, these two Chinese jets, according to this official, came within 50 feet of the American aircraft.
Oh, they love that 50 feet, right? The Russians did it within 50 feet. Maybe they just have a script. Maybe the Pentagon just has a script. Like, the plane, it was within 50 feet. We stopped time and we got out a ruler and we measured. Actually, we didn't have a ruler, so we just had a guy put his heel to his toe and then walk from one plane to the other and measure it.
Again, this occurring over the South China Sea near those disputed islands that China has been constructing airstrips on and landing military planes on, that they are hotly disputed between China and other nations in that region. Also, the U.S. does not consider them legitimate Chinese territory.
There's islands that are disputed territory? Ooh, that's pretty cool. I want to go live there.
Wolf, but again, we're being told two Chinese fighter jets, J-11s, came a fairly unsafe distance away from a U.S.
Well, this is happening all the time. We got these planes swooping in on American jets. Soon we're going to have war. So, just warning you guys. What did I miss? Oh, no. We already done those. Okay. A keeper at the Palm Beach Zoo died Friday, which was last month, actually, afternoon after being attacked by a rare kind of tiger. Stacy, who was 28, lead tiger keeper at the zoo, was killed by a 13-year-old male Malayan tiger, one of four at the facility in the contained area where the animals are fed and sleep. Zoo officials said it didn't appear Kahnweiser did anything out of the norm as she worked in the enclosure, known as the Tiger Night House, and prepared to talk with zoo visitors about the animals in a tiger talk. The tiger was off exhibit at the time, and no guest could see what happened. The tiger was never on the loose, contrary to earlier reports of social media. Oh, hang on. I think I pulled the wrong story. Not that I pulled the wrong story, but I think I pulled one that might have been old. Tiger attack Florida. We will Google it up. Ooh, okay, here's more information. Good thing I'm good at this. Holy crap. Okay, a keeper killed by a tiger in the Florida Zoo this month broke the rules when she entered the big cat's enclosure, the zoo official said. I'm getting ready to pause this video. There we go. Questions remain about the circumstances surrounding the death of the tiger keeper. The day of the attack, the zoo spokeswoman said Kahnweiser had absolutely not done anything out of the ordinary when she entered the enclosure. It was part of the daily procedure that takes place. This was something that was done every single day. So now we have someone who's saying she broke the rules and someone who's saying she didn't do anything out of the ordinary. But in a statement released Friday, a week after her death, the zoo's president said she'd violated zoo policy. All right, so we need to figure out what's going on here. There might be an updated story after that update. Florida Zoo releases timeline of tiger attack. Okay, we got to figure this out, folks. We'll see what this video says. Palm Beach Zoo officials released a timeline of the fatal attack on the zookeeper and defended the decision to tranquilize the animal rather than shoot and kill it. Ooh. What does this say? Ooh, we can just read the timeline. Video, are you going to play or not play? I don't know what's happening. Okay, I'm just going to mute it so it won't matter. The day began as normal, and then at 7:45, a zookeeper called in sick. 9 o'clock, the zoo opened. 9:30 to 10:15, Stacy and another zookeeper went to the tiger exhibits to move animals from on to off of the exhibit. What that means is the zoo's normal procedure is to have one tiger, quote, on exhibit, meaning that's the one on performance, right? Love these keeping animals in captivity, right, guys? One of these days I'm going to turn into a hippie tranny. during the day, well, the zoo is open at each of the zoo... oh, my God. This means that a single tiger is placed in the exhibits area where a tiger can be seen by guests. A second tiger on each exhibit is secured in the night house during the day. The night house is a secure structure located behind the exhibit, which is not generally accessible to the public. The procedure involved in moving tigers on and off exhibit is always performed with two zookeepers, as suggested by the AZA. Don't know who that is. That morning, Stacy and a fellow zookeeper performed the procedure together on both Tiger River and Tiger Falls exhibit areas. A male tiger was left in each night house enclosure, blah, blah, blah. Let's see. Approximately 1:55 p.m., two maintenance personnel heard what sounded like a scream coming from the night house area. They rushed to investigate. Once they concluded that someone might be injured, they followed zoo procedures and made a call for help using the zoo's radio communication system. A keeper arrived at the location, assessed the situation, and issued a code red for the zoo. A code red is an emergency call that commences a safety protocol for various reasons. One scenario where a code red can be issued is where an animal has escaped or poses a threat to humans. At this time, a call went out over the radio for paramedics to be called. Zoo personnel began ushering patrons into secure buildings. Wow! And locked down the zoo. They didn't say that in the story. So you're like, you're at the zoo. You're like, everyone, get to the bunker. The T-Rex has escaped. I don't know. Okay, that's kind of sad, actually. Family massacre reveals Ohio's massive illicit marijuana business. The only thing more shocking than murder of an entire family in rural Ohio might be to learn how big the area they grew marijuana is in the international drug trade. So, a little background. On April 22nd, 2016, the bodies of 8 people were found in 4 homes in Pike County, 60 miles from Columbus and 90 miles from Cincinnati. Okay, thanks. So draw a triangle, and now you'll know where we are. They were, 7 of the victims, 6 adults, and a 16-year-old boy were discovered to have been fatally shot execution style in 3 adjacent houses, while an 8th victim, also an adult, was found shot to death in a 4th house nearby Piketon. All of the family were members of the Roden family. Let's see here. Investigation. Police believe that more than one shooter may be responsible for the killing, since 2 of the crime scenes were within walking distance, a 3rd located about a mile away, and a 4th about 8 miles away. Investigators briefly considered the possibility of murder-suicide, but it was discredited as none of the victims' deaths appeared to be suicide. The attorney general stated that the killings were planned, premeditated, and a sophisticated operation, citing the efforts taken by the shooter or shooters to cover up their tracks and remove any incriminating forensic evidence. All of the victims were identified as members of the Roden family. Surviving family members were urged by police to take precautions, and all residents of Peebles were advised to stay inside their homes the following night. An investigative task force of at least 100 members was assembled. More than 251 law enforcement officials were involved in the investigation overall, and sheriffs from 25 offices across the la la la. At least 5 search warrants were executed, and more than 50 people were interviewed in connection with the killings, but no arrests were made so far. 79 pieces of evidence were examined, including a Facebook threat aimed at Christopher Roden Jr., who was posted before the shootings. Okay, so we've got this, 8 people from one family. It seems like all at one time, they're like, they synced their watches, they're like, okay. It's Breaking Bad style, like when they did that thing in the jails. Like, all right, sync your watches and kill. And they killed them all. And they were dead and killed and all those things that happened. And then they got away. Whoever did it got away with it. They know. They don't know. Nobody's like, so if this were cops, if this was a cop's family, this would be on news 24/7, 365 until something happened. It was some family in Ohio. And then they're like, oh, that was an interesting story for like a day. On April 25th, a spokesperson for DeWine office also confirmed that marijuana was discovered at the 3 scenes, including an indoor grow house in which hundreds of marijuana plants were being grown, as well as chickens and equipment consistent with breeding chickens for cockfighting. An estimated total of 200 marijuana plants were recovered from the crime scene, were believed to have been grown for sale and not for personal use. Oh, not for personal use, yeah. 200. Now, I'm no marijuana user. That seems excessive. If you're like, what are you doing with this 200 plants? I'm like, well, personal use, duh. It's currently unknown if the marijuana was connected to the shootings, though investigators confirmed the possibility of the involvement of a Mexican drug cartel. Are the Mexicans shipping that marijuana? I thought they were more into the harder stuff. I don't know. Let's see. On May 3rd, following the funerals of the last 6 victims, authorities towed away at least 3 vehicles from property belonging to the Roden family. As part of the investigation, they say, additional vehicles were towed the next day as well. They were all dropped off at the base of operations set up by the investigative task force. As of May 12th, more than 500 tips were submitted during the investigation and 120 interviews were conducted. On May 12th, DeWine and Pike County Sheriff announced the state's intention to relocate the mobile homes where the killings occurred to a secure location in order to preserve evidence and protect the mementos of the Roden family. This is a weird story. Because on one hand, you've got, oh, these are hard criminals. They're doing 200 plants of marijuana, and they're cockfighting. They suck. On the other hand, it's like they all got murdered, so we should probably look into it. I don't know. I don't think they care. I think the task force is like, guys, this is just how it works. This will take care of themselves. Let's see. This was not a plant in a window or six or seven plants in the backyard. They were doing this to sell. Let's see if the video has any information. There is no audio.
Ohio, a pre-planned execution. Newsy's partners at WCPO report that...
That is weird. Why would they put that audio? Why would they put that music in the background?
And one teenager across four homes in Pike County, Ohio. The victims have all been identified as members of the Roden family. Authorities say the victims were shot in the head, many of them in their beds. Three young children were found uninjured at the different crime scenes.
Oh, it's a nice cartel. They were like, okay, kill the adults, leave the babies.
Recordings of 911 calls reveal that relatives discovered the victims Friday.
I think my brother-in-law's dead.
Jeez, okay, now I'm sad. Well, I don't want to hear a panicked 911 call. Wow. Okay, so that happened. So look up, there's way too much to read. Look up the Ohio family, pot massacre. Crazy up in that criminal organization. I kind of want to get into it. The chat says, execution style was probably Darren Wilson, who killed Michael Brown, right? Darren Wilson, that is correct, right? Look it up. The cop, Darren Wilson, was not indicted in the shooting of Michael Brown, yes. I'm so tired of that story, and I don't think he shot him execution style, but you're being funny because that's what the media would have you think. That was gross. Washington State parents who starved 6-year-old boy by feeding him hot dog smoothies sentenced to 20 years in prison. That's a hype. That's a oxymoron. Whoa, why is an ad playing? I thought I got rid of these ads. Wow, that's the first ad we've had. Weird. It got past my ad block. So, starved a 6-year-old boy by feeding him. Nope. That you can't do it. Starved a 6-year-old boy by feeding him hot dog smoothies. Let's see what the
followed
video
up
says.
On a terrible abuse case we first told you about last week. We were in court as an Auburn couple pleaded not guilty to torturing a 6-year-old boy. John Nicely was there as they faced a judge this morning, and he joins us now live from the Regional Justice Center in Kent. John.
This couple showed little emotion when they made their appearance before the judge here this morning. The crime they're accused of is despicable. First, Chris...
No, it's not. I love hot dogs.
Sefton faced the judge as the prosecutor laid out the charges that he starved his son for months, sometimes as punishment for wetting the bed.
Causing physical pain or agony that was equivalent to that produced by torture.
Sefton only spoke to acknowledge his name, and his attorney entered the not guilty plea.
Christopher Sefton and Lori Lloyd forced Sefton's gaunt child. Gaunt child? Is that an adjective? Like, oh, you're very gaunt? Gaunt child to do exercises as they withheld food from him, except for the blended drink that included a piece of bread, carrots, water, vegetable oil, and hot dog. Yeah, they're juicing him. They're giving him, like, here's your protein shake. Now do more push-ups. They were using food to torture him. It had the added benefit of trying to kill him, but it was a very effective form of torture. Is that an added benefit? Prosecutor said it had the added benefit of trying to kill him. Okay. Parents also denied the boy sleep in their Auburn home. In a case so severe, the judge went above the standard range when imposing a sentence, according to the newspaper. You're allowed to do that? When he was rescued in 2014, this went on a long time. This is just sentencing now. The boy, who is tall for his age, weighed just 50 pounds. Okay, I guess the hot dog smoothies weren't working. Let's see. Sefton and Lloyd, convicted of assault and criminal mistreatment, are also accused of mistreating their two other children. So we had the one that was doing push-ups and drinking smoothies. That's the main case. But apparently they had two others. On one occasion, the boy had wet his bed, and his father got really mad, quote, After finding out the child had an accident, his father grabbed him, took his pajamas off, spanked him, and then threw him in the shower and made him take a cold shower.
Ooh.
This actually makes me kind of sad. People live like this. Like, I'm a parent, and I'm very hateful, and I hate all my kids in my life, so I'm going to beat them and throw them in showers. Ooh, now I feel sad, folks. Let's see. People ask, how can someone abuse a child? I ask, how could all these good people sit by and do nothing? Okay. The child explained that he did not like the hot dog shake, but that if he refused, he received no other food.
Ooh.
Sefton claimed that he had been giving the boy a blended drink for breakfast and dinner because he had intentionally hurt himself by choking. Oh, he choked on food, so now you can only drink smoothies. The boy's father also said that he packed a normal peanut butter and jelly sandwich and a whole apple for school lunch. Oh, he went to school. Holy crap. And then he had to come home and do push-ups. Okay. Fake bomb leads to soccer match evacuation.
Ooh.
An embarrassing security blunder brought chaos and disruption to the final day of the English Premier League soccer season Sunday as tens of thousands of fans at Manchester United iconic Old Trafford Stadium were evacuated by police because of a suspected bomb threat. United, one of the most famed and successful teams in the world, was to host something-something, another team, I can't pronounce it, to conclude its season after a package described as incredibly lifelike. What, a real doll? Oh my god, a package. It looks incredibly lifelike. By police was discovered. It included a taped device made up of a cell phone and protruding wires. Oh my goodness, that is actually like... I thought they were just going to say it's a backpack and inside it was beer. Someone forgot. The game was postponed and fans ordered out of the 75,000-seat venue. However, late Sunday in the United Kingdom, Greater Manchester Police revealed that instead of having been planted as a hoax terror threat as originally suspected, the device had been accidentally left behind as a security training exercise. Oh! This is outrageous. It is outrageous this situation arose, and a full inquiry is required to urgently find out how this happened, why it happened, and who will be held responsible, Manchester Police and Crime said. This fiasco caused a massive inconvenience to supporters who had come from far and wide to watch the match, wasted the time of huge numbers of police officers and the Army's bomb squad, and unnecessarily put people in danger. Did it put people in danger? Probably. So, yeah, if you're like, oh my god, there might be a bomb, there could be, like, panic, right? Earlier in the day, bomb disposal experts had carried out a controlled explosion of the device, but not before a nervous air descended upon Old Trafford. With the game being called off, the match will take place Tuesday, with United offering refunds to all ticket holders and free entry. There will be frustration directed at United, with this embarrassment coming at the end of the disappointing season. Okay. Yet, the bizarre saga is also a reminder that security measures and soccer now go hand in hand. The support is a legitimate target for those who seek attention or to manufacture harm. That is why, for all of the fear and tension and disappointment, there was little in the way of protest, just concern for a nervous wait for more information. Let's see if we got some more information here.
Day of disruption here at Old Trafford, followed by a very surprising update in the past half an hour. As you say, that the suspicious device that was found here around 3 p.m. this afternoon was in fact a training device left by a private firm following a training exercise involving explosive dogs. Now,
so they were using, they were doing a drill, like a bomb sniffing drill or a bomb sniffing practice, and apparently they didn't find all of them. They planted a bunch of bombs in the stadium, did a practice, didn't find them all, didn't do a count when they left for the day. All right, Jim, pack up the bombs in the van. In the van. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Didn't we have 6? No, I don't remember. Oh, well. It's fine. It's probably fine. Let's go.
This obviously is rather an embarrassing update for the club because it constitutes a fairly major mistake on their part, not to mention the disruption that was caused here today. Of course, some 75,000 fans had turned out today to watch this final match.
Well, the item did not turn out to be a viable explosive device. On appearance, this device was as real as it could be, and the decision to evacuate the stadium was the right thing to do until we could be sure that people were not at risk. So... the bomb is never a bomb, right? So we waste all this money. You got like 500 cops coming out. You got to set up another bomb to blow up the fake bomb. It's never worth it. How much does that cost? 50,000? Maybe? I don't know. That seems, maybe that's a high. Say in a small town like this, probably those several thousand, right? If you've got this suspicious bag. I've always said, hey, cops, if you see a suspicious bag and you're about to spend thousands of dollars getting a bomb squad to come in from Manchester, bring their bomb, get a little robot guy who's going to sneak up on it over a two-hour like planned thing. Just call me. I'll go open it. I'll check to see if it's a bomb. If I blow up, fine. I'm willing to risk it. You have to pay me like what it would cost or maybe a little under so it's worth it. So if it was going to cost $5,000 to bring the bomb squad in with their little robot, you got to give me at least $4,000 because I'm going to come in, I'm going to solve it way quicker, and I'm going to risk it. I'm going to open the bag, and it's just going to be beer. Someone that forgot a case of beer, and they're like, oh, my God, a bomb. It's never been a bomb. There's only two times a bomb's ever been a bomb, right? Boston and Atlanta. And I'm talking about the Atlanta... What is it called? The Olympics. The Olympics in Atlanta. Oh, by the way, so if you guys haven't looked up recently, Richard Jewell from Atlanta, that's a pretty good, that's one of the best case studies we ever have on like media guilt, right? It's like the media assumed this man was guilty of planting the Atlanta bomb. Turns out he wasn't, but they spent days going like, oh yeah, he's definitely guilty. They're just gathering evidence now. So pretty cool. If you guys all forgot about that. So everyone's innocent, including the Boston Bombers. So that happened. All right. What time we got? 13 minutes left to go. High school junior completes 7,000 pull-ups to shatter the world record. Andrew Shapiro's quest to set a Guinness World Record began 7 months ago with American Ninja Warrior and his father's cancer diagnosis. A fan of the obstacle course, challenge television show, I've watched 2 episodes, I believe, both on planes. The only time I watch TV is on a plane. So there's this, basically it's an obstacle course, but it's very upper body oriented. Like you got to do monkey bars and then you got to do like rock climbing and then you got to do more monkey bars and then you got to do swinging poles. I don't know. Anyway, the point is, fan of the obstacle course decided he wanted to dedicate himself to getting into peak physical condition inspired by his father's 5-year battle against colon cancer. The 17-year-old practiced incessant pull-ups with the goal of setting 3 world records. Beginning Saturday at 8 a.m., he started his pull-up marathon. Within 6 hours, the Langley High School junior completed 3,500 pull-ups, a new world record. By 12 hours, he had finished 5,700 pull-ups, another world record. So apparently there's world records just for how many pull-ups can you do in 6 hours? How many can you do in 12 hours? How many can you do in 24 hours? At the 15-hour mark, he had matched the previous record, but he kept going, and at 18 hours, he stopped. Like, okay, I'm at 18. That's enough. Now, why would you do that? So you're at 18 hours, right? You've got 24 hours to do all your pull-ups. At 18, you're just like, that's enough pull-ups. I don't want to make the record any bigger. I mean, even if you stopped for like 3 hours and came back to it, you'd be like, okay, I can still do more. Well, maybe you can't. Maybe you're going to get those DOMS. Your muscles will be too, like, maybe your muscles will be just completely useless after doing 7,300 pull-ups in 18 hours. So here's the video of it.
So you remember those old Nothing But Net commercials with Larry Bird and Michael
Crap.
Jordan? Tallest basket ever made. No.
Well, that didn't work. That was not the video I wanted. Oh, crap. I don't think I'm going to get a good one going here. Anyway, he does... It's pretty boring. Oh, here's a video. I think there's going to be music, though. Yep, there's music. Wow, what an idiot. So, basically, he's got this clock in front of him. He's got a pull-up bar, he's got a clock, and he's got a mat or whatever. And then, I don't know how many people are watching, but there's a video set up. By the way, who's in charge of, like, does the whole thing have to be recorded? Because that is going to be a big memory card that you're going to need. So, he does some pull-ups. He probably does, like, you know, 6 to 10 at a time, and then he takes a break, does 6 to 10 more at a time, and just keeps doing that in cycles for 24 hours. Okay, all the viewers have left the stream. Are we? I think we're still streaming. Yeah, it looks fine. I mean, nobody's up this early, so what the heck? What do you expect? Okay, cool. Although that gives me no pressure to keep going. A federal investigation into the Amtrak 188 derailment that killed 8 people and injured more than 200 in Philadelphia last year has concluded that the train's engineer, Brandon, was distracted prior to the crash. Okay, so you're like, oh, he's probably texting his phone. Specifically, he was, and we probably covered this story when it happened, this Amtrak train was going like 120 around a turn that's rated for like 60, which resulted in a derailment. Specifically, he was distracted by radio conversations between other trains and dispatchers about other trains being hit with projectiles. Announcing their find, the NTSB concluded, announcing their findings at a public meeting. NTSB investigators say they found no evidence the Amtrak engineer was using alcohol, drugs, or a cell phone. The ride from the train station in Philadelphia to the site of the derailment was 11 minutes. What? Who cares? Investigators say 7 to 9 of those minutes the engineer was listening to and participating in the radio conversations regarding other trains being hit with a projectile. When NTSB investigators interviewed him, the discussion of trains being hit with a projectile was one of the few details the engineer remembered clearly. Interesting. He said that there's good, the investigator said that there's good circumstantial evidence to make the case that the radio chatter is what distracted him. Oh, there's circumstant. Now they're saying, okay, so earlier it said, we've concluded that there, that the radio chatter distracted him. Now it's saying there's good circumstantial evidence to make the case that it did. So they're like, we don't really know. We're just going to say that. The board made recommendations to the Federal Railroad Administration Tuesday for recurrent training for train engineers to help them better manage the necessary tasks and control of the train. So a huge accident happened. They're like, we need to do an investigation. Oh my God, something happened. We have to do something, right? We need more procedures. The board wants to require that railroads install devices and develop procedures that will help crew members identify their current location as well as display their upcoming route in territories where positive train control will now be implemented. The board also recommended that Amtrak incorporate strategies into their initial and recurrent training for operating crew members for recognizing and effectively managing multiple concurrent tasks in prolonged as well as atypical situations to sustain their attention on current and upcoming train operations. Wow, that was too much to think about. I was just reading words and not even thinking. Basically, multitasking while not crashing a train. We need training for that. So here's the thing. Okay, could you retrofit every train with some sort of GPS that's talking to the track? The track's telling the train where it is, if it needs to slow down. Maybe. But everyone's going to be like, that's way too expensive. We can't do that. And we can't do that just because one guy derailed. Sorry, we've been running trains hundreds a day for years, and this doesn't happen. So we don't need this. On the other hand, it's like, would it help? If it could be done cheaply, would it help? So here's what you do. It's easy. iPad, right? So iPad, it's got its GPS. It already has that. You can install anything on an iPad, right? So all we need, sure, it's going to take thousands, right? It's going to take thousands of dollars, maybe... Maybe hundreds of thousands. It won't take millions, though, I don't think. Program an iPad app. The iPad app has all the routes in it, like all the train routes. So the iPad's in the train. The iPad knows where you are. If the iPad has the train routes in it, it knows where you... It assumes you're on a train route because it's a specially designed app for the train. It knows certain areas and what the speed limit is because all of the routes are programmed on the train, on the iPad. How easy? Okay, so the GPS can tell how fast you're going. The GPS can tell where you are. If you're going over the limit, it would alert you. Would it be able to auto-stop the train? That's what everyone wants. They want, oh, we need devices in the train that will click the emergency brakes if you're over speed. That does exist on some tracks. It doesn't, I don't think it exists in the U.S. on Amtrak. I think it's like European stuff has that. That would be millions to implement. Not an iPad app, though, that would, like, flash warning, warning, too fast, oh my God, hit the brakes, right? That could have stopped the thing if it, you know, It could even be hooked up to a speaker system, like through the little headphone thing that starts alarming if you're going too fast. I don't know. Could even have a picture of the emergency brake. Like, say the engineer dies or passes out, right? Someone comes up there and they're like, what do I do? Now the iPad's flashing and it's like, hit the button to the right. And you do that, everyone's saved. Wow. I am a genius, and please give me credit when this is the thing. CIA mistakenly destroys copy of 6,700-page U.S. torture report. U.S. Inspector General's office said it had mistakenly destroyed its only copy of the comprehensive Senate torture report, despite lawyers for the Justice Department assuring a federal judge that copies of the document were being preserved. The erasure of the document by the spy agency's internal watchdog was deemed an inadvertent foul-up by the Inspector General. How is this possible? One intelligence community source told Yahoo News, which first reported the development, that last summer CIA Inspector General officials deleted an uploaded computer file with the report and then accidentally destroyed a disk that also contained the document. Oh, here's the torture report. Oops, my finger slipped on the delete key. Sir, that's okay. We have a backup. Oh, okay. Here, give me the backup. Is it on CD? Okay, thanks. Thanks for putting it on CD. I'm going to put it back on the computer. Thanks for giving me the CD. And crunch, 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 crunch. Oh, my finger slipped again. My finger slipped. The torture report, it's gone. I don't know. Goodness. The 6,700-page document contains thousands of secret files about the CIA's use of enhanced interrogation methods, including waterboarding, sleep deprivation, and other aggressive interrogation techniques at a black site prison overseas. The full version of the report remains classified, but a 500-page executive summary was released to the public in 2014. Let's see what this video says. It's going to be loud.
Former Vice President Dick Cheney says a Senate report faulting the CIA for brutal interrogation tactics is full of crap. In his first public comments since the report was released, Cheney told Fox News Channel on Wednesday that it was a terrible piece of work, and he insisted that the interrogation tactics had produced vital intelligence. What happened here was that we asked the agency to go take steps and put in place programs that were designed to catch the bastards who killed 3,000 of us on 9/11.
Oh, yep, 9/11. I love doing terrorism, and I love doing torture because of 9/11. Douglas Cox, a City University of New York School of Law professor who specializes in tracking the preservation of federal records, told Yahoo News it's breathtaking that this could have happened, especially in the Inspector General's office. They're the ones who are supposed to be providing accountability within the agency itself. Yeah, if you're so dumb that you delete files, you kind of have to, like, lose your position at the government. You can't be the government anymore if you're deleting files all the time. Another copy of the report exists elsewhere within the CIA, which is waiting for the conclusion of a years-long legal battle over the document. So it says another copy of the report exists elsewhere. Senate Intelligence Committee Chairman Richard Burr opposed the publication of the report in 2014. Since taking power, he has attempted to recover copies of the report that were distributed. So copies were distributed, and he's been trying to pull it back and destroying the evidence, right? Oh, my goodness. Let's see. Feinstein, whoever that is, he sounds important, is now calling for the CIA inspector to obtain a new copy of the report to replace the one that disappeared. Your prompt response will allay any concern that this was more than an accident, he says. Okay. Let us see. Jail sentence for YouTube pranksters. We are coming up on the end of the show, folks, but we're going to do this. The group, four members of the controversial Troll Station YouTube channel have been jailed in connection with fake robberies and kidnappings. The group were involved in a fake robbery in London's National Portrait Gallery and a fake kidnapping in Britain in July 2015. A fake kidnapping and a fake robbery? The channel, with 7 tenths of a million subscribers, has built a reputation for filming staged pranks. A fifth member was imprisoned in March following a bomb hoax. So there's this YouTube channel that just does, like, bomb threats or, like, robberies or fake kidnappings and then puts it on YouTube. The hoaxes may have seemed harmless to them, but they caused genuine distress to a number of members of the public who should be able to go about their daily business without being put in fear's way. Without being put in fear in this way, sorry. We hope that these convictions will send a strong message that unlawful activities such as these will not be tolerated in London. Daniel Jarvis, and three other people were sentenced on Monday. The four pleaded guilty to two counts of using threatening, abusive, or insulting words or behavior with intent to cause fear of or provoke unlawful violence. Blah, blah, blah. Am I able to watch any of these videos? Let me go to the Troll Station YouTube. And they did say... whoa. Okay, that's a little annoying. They did say it happened last July, so that would put it as 9 months ago. I might not be able to scroll that far. Oh, YouTube's locked up. Wow. They have way too many videos here. If you go to Troll Station YT on YouTube. I don't think I'm... Now, they're still doing videos. So I guess they're like, well, they arrested four of us. Does anyone else want to do things? Let's see if I can find... any... Ooh, okay. Art gallery heist. Here we go. Okay, it's hard to tell if that is added. That audio is added after. So we got a black guy. He's going to pull his stockings over his face to look like a prankster. Or not a prankster. Hey, I'm a prankster and I'm here to steal all your stuff. To look like a robber. And he's about to run into the art gallery. Let's see what happens. Oh, I see. Okay, so two guys ran behind him, like his accomplices, and they already have two pieces of artwork. Now, of course, they didn't steal it from the art gallery. They took it there, but they're pretending that they just stole from the art gallery. So people were just walking by and like not even looking. Okay. This is 2 minutes long. This could be... Okay, so they're sneaking up to the art gallery. There's a shot from outside. Oh, now there's some shots from inside. Someone's taking video. Oh, we're going to see...
Are you done? Get the pens! Are you done? Get the pens! Get the pens! Get the pens!
Oh, this is real. Okay, so it looks... I think that alarm is real. That is actually from the art gallery. Someone has run into the... art museum, and they're yelling, get the paintings, get the paintings, get the paintings, right?
Hey, you guys, get the paintings! Get the paintings! Get the paintings!
And so now, the hey, pranks... Wow, that's going to be really annoying. Now the pranksters are just grabbing... Look at all the guests, they're like running.
I've got the paintings!
Oh man, they're scaring like every guest out of the gallery. And they're acting like the Three Stooges, like running into each other, like, oh, get the paintings, get the paintings.
Everyone grab a painting with us.
I can't, we can't watch it. We can't watch it with the alarm, sorry. But anyway, I guess if you want to watch a bunch of pranks, here's a prank called eating bugs in public.
Ew. Jesus. Dirty animal. Yeah, you don't have a cockroach.
Not doing it. All right. That has been News with Nick. It is now 7:04 in the morning. Gotta do all of the normal things. Oh, wait! George Zimmerman sold the gun that he used to kill Trayvon Martin for more than $120,000. He's been making headlines for trying to auction off the gun, and it sold for $120,000 or Anyway, that's some sort of a million. $120,000. TMZ reported that seven verified users were bidding on the gun. The identity of the winning bidder remains unknown. And I heard that Zimmerman's actually going to take the money that he is getting from the gun, and he's donating it to anti-Black Lives Matter people. It's like Blue Lives Matter or whatever. I don't know what he's donating it to, but he said he was going to donate it to some cop organization. Or maybe he was saying, I'll donate part of it. So you sell it for $120,000, you donate like $5,000. And so kill a Trayvon, sell your gun, $120,000. Wow. Big bucks. All right, that is about it, folks. For News with Nick, thanks for coming out for May 19th, 2016. And we'll post the show. And if you want the video version, see if it got posted to the website later. Okay, bye.